This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cameron Rasslan, today we have, he is with the Morning Run, and he is Sim Wee Boon.
Hello, hello.
Hello, good to have you here. And we've also got, well, he's kind of like a regular presence, but we've managed to tempt him out with offers of having him see kittens and stuff, and he's very excited, but he's going to be very disappointed when he has to talk, and it is producer Ali Johan.
Hey, hey.
Hello. Finally, we've got you again.
Coming off the bench for somebody else who's supposed to be on the show, but glad to be here.
No, you are our number one pick all along.
Thank you.
Anyway, our three topics this week are: topic number one is year-end lists, topic number two is gym culture, and finally, topic number three is toxic fandom.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Ali, year-end lists.
So, you know, we're coming up to the end of 2019, and December is normally when we see year-end lists in all of media. Best music, best podcasts, best TV, best books, best movies. And obviously, for me, the music lists are mostly what I'm into. But how do I feel about it is why I want to talk about this, because I've come through it every year and gone through the list. If it's a top 100, I go from 100 to 1. If it's top 50, 50 to 1, you know? And I feel like most of the time, I like to see the trends from the different websites or different publications. How many of these different lists have the same bunch of records or books? Because most of the time, I'm not up to date. So I go with that and I see like, oh, so Frank Ocean is top 5 in 5 different lists. And then I say, oh, this is probably good lah. Or I see like another sort of, I don't know, whatever, movie, for instance. I go like, oh, so 6 websites say, you know, this is their number one. So it's got to be good. How else do I feel about it? I feel quite pressured of not knowing half of what's on there.
Oh, fear of missing out. Eh?
Yeah, totally. Because,
sure.
You know,
inadequate,
not up to date, inadequate.
I'm like, social media.
Sometimes you find, for me again, music records that, yeah, it's been high on your rotation, your own rotation, and you see them making its way on the list. You go like, okay, not bad. I'm listening to good things. I've been into what is considered great to the rest of the world and to many people. So there's always that feeling that I need to catch up because, you know.
Yeah, but you know, Ali, this confession that you're making now, I find it very disturbing because I look to you as being this arbiter of encyclopedic knowledge.
Sorry to disappoint you, but I'm always...
You're inadequate.
Yes. Most of the time
feet
I feel
of
that,
clay.
Yeah. And then when I find myself not having heard of these records or like having seen any of these covers before, I wonder about one thing, the universal standard to these lists. And, you know, so like for me, I'm easily swayed by a very well-written review.
Mm-hmm.
So if it writes and I read it, I'm like, wow, it sounds so good. Like, okay, I'll go check it out. But one thing that breaks it for me is like, so some albums are growers. They might not make the best of list for the year, but
if you
listen to it 3 years from now, it's so good. So that's that, you know, like,
yeah.
Why do I sort of buy into this list?
I can't listen to anymore. I'm sorry. Sim.
Well, I mean, most of the time, these lists, like you said, they're almost the same. They're almost similar because, I mean, very sure some of them look at each other and they're like, oh, they put that. We should put that too.
Yeah.
The type of year-end list that I like is when publication posts what they ask their own staff or what they ask around people. You know, there are those lists that like, you know, we went around the room and we asked our editor what is our editor's favorite this or favorite moment or favorite movie. We asked our photographer, you know, and then there's a variety of different lists. And usually it's not super long, like 50, it's like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Helps with the onslaught of titles that are coming out, you know. I think most of the time why there's so many now is because there's just so many stuff out there. You know, there's so many stuff out there. And a lot of times, if you're dealing with an online publication, I feel like when they take into account what's good or what's top on their list, they take into account of what social media said. So let's say you have a movie or you have a band, food, you know, and if it was trending on social media, it's very likely it would be part of a top 5 list. You know, like top 5 trends of this year, boba. You know, top 5 movie of this year, The Joker, you know, not only because it made so much money, but also a lot of people talk about it.
Hmm.
But sometimes when you talk about it, it doesn't mean it's good. So,
and there is a dark side, of course, which is that One is it's easy copy, as Sim says. Yeah, you can just go around the office and go, just name me five things fast.
Yeah.
And the other is that there might even be relationships between the publication and these various et ceteras.
So wait, so that means it's actually more depressing than what I think it is. It's not actually taste driven anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It's statistics.
You got to ask yourself, was it ever taste driven at a certain level as well? I mean, for me, it's also, what's the whole point of having a year-end list or a New Year's list, like bands to watch in 2020, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, like you said, right, what is the universal testing standards, right? For me, I find myself going to these lists, it's more of just to see, like, what's new out there. It's just another way of me finding something new.
To catch up, right?
It's nicer this way because you compile it all for me. So maybe I've missed out on this year, then okay, I'll just check it out. But I think at the end of the day, you just got to judge for yourself whether it's good or not, because tastes have changed.
I mean, like, if you know, Celine Dion puts out her top 50 albums of the year, I don't think Ali Johan's going to find too many crossovers there.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, so yeah, I'm obviously looking forward to lists by, you know, websites like Serogum, NME, Rolling Stone, Guardian, obviously the other one. These are like my compasses sometimes. Gets me riled up sometimes. Yeah. It gets me like feeling inadequate.
Yeah. That,
you know. I'm waiting for the BFM top 10 list.
Yeah, the BFM top 10
list. We've never done that. I mean, probably not. We should. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Obviously, don't ask me, but I'd say, oh, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
But do you guys make a habit of making year-end lists, like, or New Year's lists, like, I don't know, like a list of great bands that you've listened to, great movies you watch, or like, you know, things that you're supposed to do or you want to do.
I mean, yeah, sure. I think back in 1995 was the last time I did that.
I was 4 years old.
You were even born, I'm amazed.
I only have like a top two most of the time, never a 10 or a 20, you know, because you don't spend enough time doing these things. We spend a long time with a record most of the time, right? We don't actually just skim through it and go like, okay, this is going on number 18 out of my top 20.
Okay, so we're going to move on though. But Ali, can we commit to this, the BFM top 20?
I'd rather list? Not.
Oh, go on. You can ask the people in the office.
We'll find a way to put it on air somehow.
On the website.
Yeah, probably.
Tell us, fans. Is good this
idea.
What you want?
Yeah.
Good idea, but taste is subjective.
Yeah, yeah. So, oh, obviously. Yeah. Okay, so we move on, though, to topic number two, which is gym culture. Now, this is something I know absolutely nothing about, but I want to learn. And so I want to learn mostly, actually, from you, Sim, because you've recently, for a while now, you've been going to the gym.
A couple of months.
And you really improved. You look much better.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And so the other day I was walking along, and I saw this guy, and he'd obviously just come from the gym, and he was looking down at himself. He was obviously very proud of his upper body physique, and he should have been proud. But he's put a lot of work into it, time. He's probably changed his diet, his entire lifestyle, to develop this. So he had this very well developed upper body, but his body just tapered down. His legs were spindly little things.
Yeah, that's what people call that he forgot leg day.
Right.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Right.
Poor
guy. Forgot leg day.
But it struck me, though, that, you know, from his point of view, his body looked like what he, in his imagination, he had this power.
Did you talk to him? Did you ask him if that was the case?
Well, I mean, why?
Maybe he just saw a coin on the floor and he was like, like, you know?
I don't know. So, Sim, I mean, I've not been to a gym. Ali here, you've been.
Not to work out, just to shower.
That is,
that doesn't count.
That's almost good. You did pay, did you? Or were you just, who is that guy in the showers? So Sim, I mean, like, what's it like? What's gym culture?
Okay, disclaimer, I'm not like a professional athlete or anything. I just go to the gym to work out.
Yeah, you look better, but not that much better, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, easy. Yeah.
And I've not been around. I've just been to this one gym that I go to.
Yeah.
But from the conversations I've had and, you know, talking to people, I think the whole thing around gym culture is that it differs. It differs. Like, different gyms, different places of working out have different mentalities. Even the same type of gyms, but a different brand or different bunch of people handling it would have a different kind of, like, culture.
And the different speciality.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it all boils down to, like, I think the people that run it and the people that are in it. Like, the gym that I go to, it feels very positive to going there. Like, you go there and I feed off the positive energy in the gym, because everyone, you know how there's this stereotype that when you go to the gym and it's just all really jacked up bros, like, you know, yeah, blah,
blah, yeah, but this, right? is what I imagine.
Yeah, it's like, but you know, there are a lot of gyms now that they're not like that. Like the gym that I go to, you know, you have people of all shapes and sizes, you know, different genders, you know, and they all are just working out, helping each other, like, you know, hey, do this, like, you know, it. Why I like doing that, and some of my friends who've been there for the first time, and they've found that the kind of like the first thing to break is that stereotype where like it's very intense.
Yeah. You definitely can be driven to,
yeah,
to your targets, right?
Exactly. A lot of the people there, when you go, you discover that, you know, they're all just all very chill, you know, like, you know, there's a degree of acceptance, there's a degree of positivity, and everyone's there to help each other with why you're going to the gym. You know, some go there because they want to.
Sounds like you're going to like a taman permainan in a park.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, yeah, it's kind of like when you're a younger kid, you know, when you're going to go to a taman, right, to play. You just moved in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And okay, you want to go to taman and you're like, oh, but I don't know if that's kids. And, you know, a lot of these are just preconceived notions, but once you enter it, then you join the kids, you discover it. Everyone just want to play and have fun, you know?
Okay,
yeah.
So that one, it works for you.
It works for me.
That,
yeah,
that atmosphere.
Yeah, so there are a lot of people out there. There are some people that they don't enjoy that. So the ones that I go to is class-based. Of course, you can go there anytime it's open and just work out, uh-huh, use the equipment if you paid for the membership. But they also have classes in the morning and the evening.
Oh, I thought you meant like classes in middle class. And
no, like class.
Where are we going with this one?
Where the coach will kind of like guide.
Oh, you're working class. You can't come in.
like classes where the coach will like guide. Like, you know, like, okay, today we'll all do this together, you know. So that setting where a bunch of people are working out together, doing same workout, that helps me because that motivates me. But there are people that like to do it just by themselves, you know, they join.
Well, that's the thing that struck me with it's actually what I gather from the images that I get is that it's actually quite a lonely experience.
It doesn't have to be.
But it can be that you're shaping yourself making your own pace, etc., all on your own. So lots of people in there, but it's actually quite alone.
Yeah, and I think from my observation, obviously outside looking in, I think doing it in a group helps you achieve your targets. If you go by yourself, you know, you could be doing it at your own pace and not...
And doing it wrong.
Probably, but you get tips and tricks from people around you, but you're still by yourself, so there's nothing else to sort of push you over the edge.
Not important thing to note, but I think to note about it is that the gym culture thrives in urban settings.
Sure.
You know, outside of cities and suburban areas, you know, people don't go to the gym. People people work out, run. That's the criticism that comes with gym, because people go like, why do I need to pay money to do something that I can do in a park?
Well, this is the next thing I'd like to get to it is the self-imagined perfect physique, right? That I would imagine that, you know, you're setting yourself targets and everything. But one of the targets you're ultimately setting is, I want to look like this, what I have in my head. And different cultures have very different body shapes, which sort of surprises me. So like when you watch, say, well, the traditional Hollywood movies, there's the six pack and the sort of pecs, which are a bit odd. And then you go to Bollywood, though. The body shape is, the male body shape ideal is very different. It's a very strong, I can't, it's almost like the muscles, the biceps are like just a big cricket ball. Suddenly it's like, bing. And I was on the East Coast once, and the perfect body shape, I mean, I don't obviously have it, is there was this fisherman, and he was probably in his 60s. I mean, he might have been 25 years old, but you know, years of working as a fisherman, he was in his 60s, and he didn't have an ounce of body fat on him. It was a body that worked. And I really, when I looked at him, I realized, oh, that is actually what people kind of should look like.
But if
you're just working, if you're working out, then you're going to be,
I mean,
putting emphasis on...
There's also, like, why you're working out, you know. There's a lot of people doing it for different reasons, you know. I have a friend, he was slightly overweight, but then he had, like, a health scare. And he worked out, you know, and working out, he went to the gym to work out, and, you know, he changed his diet. Now he's lost his weight, and he's so much more healthier. So there's the health aspect to it.
Yeah.
There's the physical aspect to it. You see something, and, you know, you're like, okay, I want to look like that, and you go work out. Some also take it as a communal activity. Like the gym that I go to, it can be communal, but there's also a load of other gyms now that there's like spin classes and all. It's very communal. People go to, you know, as an activity with friends as well. Technology also has a part to play in it, because right now we have these new applications and systems where you can sign up for a membership with this app or platform, and they actually are partnered with a dozen type of gyms, and you can go to different gyms, different type of workouts. You can do yoga, you can go for spin classes, you can go for CrossFit gyms. So you kind of like it transformed from being just trying to go to get a physical body or trying to, you know, whatever, your help with your health, to an activity that you're apart from just going home to watch Netflix.
Okay. Yeah. So my wife is actually a yoga teacher, and so she's got this great physique. And it's a bit embarrassing when the two of us are together. It's a bit like that scene in Return of the Jedi when Princess Leia's in a bikini and with Jabba the Hutt.
Oh my God. Don't say that to yourself.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, yeah, I get what you mean, Cam. Some people go to the gym and they come out looking like Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
And then some of them go to the gym and come out looking like Mr. Universe or something. Wow. So yeah, I mean, you do it for different reasons, wow. but it is a very prevalent thing in cities, I feel. Mm-hmm. As you said, I mean, and of course, outside of the gyms, there are very few free parks to exercise in with guidance. You're just probably like...
Yeah, safety is a big issue. You want people to be there to see if you're doing something wrong or doing something dangerous.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sim, as I say, you're looking much better.
Thank you again.
Agreed.
Well, yeah, and if your gym could wave a magic wand and give me the physique that I wanted, I would want the Bruce Lee physique. Yeah.
With David Bowie hair?
Oh, wow.
Oh, you're... You just come with me, like, we go together.
No, I'm blown away at that one. Okay, let's do it. I can barely think. So in a moment, though, we're going to have topic number 3, toxic fandom, here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Ali Johan, and Sim Wee Boon. And now, Sim, toxic fandom.
Yes. Okay, so why I want to talk about toxic fandom is because I think recently I read an article. I don't know it's how the... true the claim is, but it, you know, this is something to talk about. So the Game of Thrones movie showrunners, very hard to pronounce name, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, the Game of Thrones, the two guys that did Game of Thrones. So they had a deal to do a new Star Wars trilogy, and they turned it down, you know. Oh. Of course, they were saying that, oh, we are weighing in other deals, we have this deal with Netflix, yada, yada, yada. But another report came out to say that actually a big deal of it is related to toxic fandom as well. Mm. So they were out of the backlash of the 8th season of Game of Thrones, which fans reacted very negatively to, and also the history of toxic fandom with Star Wars. They kind of got cold feet, and they're like, you know what, we don't want to bother with this, you know. So it just got me to think about, like, so in TV and music, every age is kind of like the 70s were about experimentation, you know, the 80s were about like concepts and stuff, like the 90s was about being indie. It kind of feel like now is about fans. You know, you've mentioned this several times as well. I think when we were talking about Marvel being art, and you were saying that a lot of the reasons why modern movies are done this way is because of China, because they want to access the China market, which in terms of translation is the fans. So a lot of things that are being created now, somehow or rather, it ends up to be, might be, I mean, depends on who you ask, it's somewhat fan-servicing. A lot of the studios, when they create something, they have the fans in mind, which you should.
Just giving them what they want. Yeah.
But is it getting a bit too much? Because, you know, the headlines that follow toxic fans, you know, like Star Wars. So I don't know, did you watch The Last Jedi?
Yeah,
you know.
What am I?
Yeah. But, you know.
I didn't.
Yeah, but yeah, there was a lot of negativity that brought in there because a lot of people didn't like it.
I didn't get it. I didn't
right,
see
right, you know,
yeah.
People were angry at Rian Johnson. Rose Tycho, she got That's bullied on Instagram, you know.
Playing racism.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, these fans, so you got me thinking, like, what? Why? Because, you know, why this is happening and, you know, will it continue to happen? Because, I mean, these guys are the ones that are somehow or other paying the studios, giving the money to the studios. So, you know.
Entitlement to... Yeah. I mean, yeah. I count, my opinion counts, and I want it the way I want it.
Exactly, you know. And I think it's also because, again, it's social media, yes. And also, it's because it's so much more easier to kind of like, I don't know, form a connection with these type of things right now because, you know, back then maybe when social media wasn't around, when the internet wasn't around, you know, when a movie came out, there were so many degrees of separation between you and a movie star and a director.
And it was a gift to you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just sort of took it as it was.
Now, I mean, you know, if I love the movie, I can literally get on Instagram and find the director or find the actress and message her. I don't know if her she will read it or her social media team read it.
Yeah, and chances are they will reply you.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So it's so connected. So maybe you kind of get that sense of entitlement that nowadays when something's created, you're like, you know, like they didn't ask me about this. How dare them? You know.
Yeah.
So yeah,
you feel entitled almost.
Exactly. So
but Ali, I mean, you're in a band, right? You got any toxic fans? I mean, are they?
I mean, it depends on how you see it.
Yeah.
Because people are bound to compare and they are bound to sort of give their two cents,
yeah,
quote unquote.
And what do you say?
As if it's gospel. but I mean, yeah, I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinions.
But when does it get too much? That's the thing, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, I've never had like a real thing like that.
I was talking to a friend who is, he's English and he's an Arsenal fan.
Mm.
And he was just talking about this very thing. He's an Arsenal fan. He's been an Arsenal fan his entire life. But he was saying he was thinking of actually like ditching Arsenal because of, he said that the fans are too toxic. On the internet, it's this toxicity of hate and a demand that it be this way, and not just now, but yesterday.
it's so bad. Like recently also there's this so this rapper that I really like, Tyler the Creator, he had a music festival called Camp Flog Gnaw or something. So when they kind of like had their poster out, they had like special guests, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people thought it was Frank Ocean, but when Drake came out, everyone just booed at him and he had to leave the stage. Like,
yeah, he stopped his set halfway.
And Drake is like a great artist.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've heard of him. Exactly.
And
right.
I quite like what I've heard.
Exactly.
It's a bit of culture right here.
So this is another example, right? Because like, you know, like just because you expected these people and then someone comes out and you know, I mean, even if you don't like it, you don't have to like be so negative, you know. So
yeah.
It's
but can you understand why people might do that though? I mean, do you have any kind of insight?
Again, like what I say, is that connection as well. And I think it's also because like it's so much more easier to be angry now. It's so much more easier to be kind of like be forefront about your thoughts right now. Because one, you can hide behind a sense of anonymity.
Totally,
you
know? Yeah.
And two, I think it's because people are just much, much more rude nowadays.
I mean, I'm all for open-mindedness and for, you know, artists, creatives in general to be able to accept feedback from people, but this toxicity sometimes extends beyond that. Sometimes it's unnecessary, right? I mean, the booing of Drake for me was like, I was perplexed. You know, why would you do that to somebody? I mean, for sure, the festival goers paid money and they were expecting somebody else, but then somebody else that they were not such a huge fan of came on stage, but they really didn't have to do that. But
it wasn't promised to you in the first place, you know.
Yeah.
But is this Billy Ocean fella like completely different?
Billy Ocean. he's different, and he's
like completely different. I mean,
I don't think so. I don't.
Is there no Venn diagram crossover?
There ought to be. I don't know for sure, but Frank Ocean and Drake are definitely not promising Frank Ocean and The Cure comes on, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, it's still...
This is the fans, you know? Like, I think it's not just fans. I think everyone in general just needs to chill, you know? Just need to chill out. Yeah.
And Ali, I just want to say, I respect the fact you use a language that I can understand. The Cure, thank you.
I mean, Robert Smith has his fans and you would imagine, I mean, you reverse the situation in a sort of a rock setting and you promise The Cure to come on and suddenly somebody else. But who else are going to be worthy to replace The Cure? Probably nobody. But
I mean, they paid their money.
Yeah, but
it was a last minute thing. The curtain went up and they were thinking, hey, Frank Ocean.
Yeah.
And then, no, it's a last minute thing.
No, really.
I mean I can get that.
In the poster, it was just special guests. And
they got it in their heads.
Some people started speculating. Yeah. And, you know,
it could have been the Chemical Brothers. It could have been Aretha Franklin's hologram.
But it goes back down to essentially the core point of, like, you know, it's about, like, do you give the fans what they want? And of course you should, but at what point has it become too much?
So the fans, and we're all fans, not being challenged by the possibility of newness?
Well, no, they're just, I think in a large group, especially looking up to the stage and seeing something they were not expecting, they all grouped up to boo him. I mean, that's so uncool.
Mm.
It could have been done in a different way. They could have, you know, at least flock the Instagram page of the organizers, perhaps, and said, like, yo, that was uncool.
I mean, it's the same with movies as well. You know, a movie came out, like the Ghostbuster movie, the one that was, they redid it with a full women cast, you know, and that had so much negative.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah, and even before the movie came out, there's this thing where reviewers, these online reviewers, would just go on Rotten Tomatoes and just downvote it so that it has really terrible voting.
But
and,
sometimes, you know, though, I wonder if that kind of thing is a manufactured outrage to get extra publicity.
I don't think so, because sexism in this setting, in movies, in pop culture, is a very real thing, especially in gaming as well, in TV shows, you know, when the scriptwriter turns out to be a woman and people start to be like, oh no, you didn't write it as well as this other person did, you know, or the game developers like, oh no, you know, you know, like so the rage that comes with these angry nerds is very scary.
Yeah.
Okay, well, before I wrap up, has anyone here done any toxic fandom stuff? Have you ever been negative out loud? Ever?
No, I don't think so.
I can't recall, but yeah. I generally try to keep, like, my comments are just down to emojis most of the time.
I mean, it's easier to leave the stage if you're not enjoying what's happening, right?
Yeah,
isn't
yeah,
that
yeah.
much easier thing to do?
Hmm.
So it's weird. And I think people who were expecting Frank Ocean to appear at that festival also have Drake on their same playlist.
Hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, and because of your conduct, I think Frank Ocean would be like, you know what, I ain't going to be playing this because these guys are scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to have to find out who Frank Ocean is.
Yeah.
I think you like it. You should give it a listen. I think you like it. Yeah,
okay. Because I'm, you know, I'm groovy. so we move on, though, to recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest. And I believe Ali's going first.
Yeah, so I think a couple of days ago we celebrated Universal Children's Day at the station, 20th of November, I believe. And I'm going to recommend a kid drummer, because I drum, and she's this Japanese girl called Yoyoka.
Mm.
Check her out on YouTube, Y-O-Y-O-K-A. She is 10 now, I believe. And she does the best rock and roll drum covers there is out there.
I've seen her. She's been all over my Twitter feed.
Yeah. So Yoyoka started off when she was like, what, 2 or 3? So she's like this child prodigy on drums, plays with a big smile on her face, and pulls off the chops like it's nothing at all. Sometimes, you know, putting adults to shame. And she's not just bashing the drums. I think she first made her name with a cover of a Led Zeppelin song.
Wow.
And then in the light of the announcement of Rage Against the Machine's reunion for next year, she did a Rage Against the Machine cover, which are not easy to do. And then this week, early this week, she uploaded a video doing Toto's Rosanna.
Whoa.
Which is one of the toughest drum techniques to do for many drummers.
Right, what is it?
It's called a shuffle. I don't even know how to explain it to
you. Shuffle, right.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it has a sound, and you know, it's all about your wrist movements.
You use the drumstick.
Obviously.
God, yeah, way to talk down to me. Yeah.
And Yoyoka is just doing it with a smile on her face again. She's like, you know, very small little girl doing it.
So what's her name again?
Yoyoka, Y-O-Y-O-K-A. Check her out on YouTube. She's got like the best smile.
Yeah, she's really into it.
Anybody can have while they're playing drums.
Yeah. Have you seen it since?
No, I've not. No, I'm going to get it off.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. She's really good. And John Bonham is like, I mean, he's just the greatest drummer.
So yeah, I mean, for
such a huge sound.
One thing though, every time I watch her video, I think about her parents, probably her father, who may have like sort of, you know, woken her up every day at 6 a.m. in the morning and told her to brush your teeth and go to the drums.
I don't know.
Yeah, or he actually is like, or none of them are actually interested in music instruments.
Wow, that would be interesting too.
That would be really weird, like if she just started picking up by herself.
I listen to a lot of classical music, and one of my favorite musicians is, composers, is a modern composer called Steve Reich. And I've noticed actually that Japanese orchestras and musicians have a lot of swing. What I mean by swing is that there's so much syncopation to the way they play, whatever the instrument is, be it a trumpet or whatever. There's a swing to it that it's just sort of built into the Japanese
people are cool.
Yeah. This is next level.
Yeah. Okay, so my recommendation is so many times I'm walking down the streets and people come up to me and they say, Cam, can you recommend to me a really good single volume book on Napoleon Bonaparte?
My God.
Every day. Every day.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah. Stop being you, man.
I know. Yeah, yeah. And finally, I can. and it's by the Polish historian Adam Zamoyski. And it's simply called Napoleon. And it's really, really good. It, also because the man is, the author is Polish, it gives you a different perspective. Because normally most authors are coming from an Anglo American perspective,
French.
Perhaps, yeah, French, but taking that kind of Polish perspective.
What does it humanize Napoleon or anything?
It does actually, and he's not trying to paint Napoleon either as a great man or a good guy or a bad guy or whatever, but as a human guy,
simple guy. What? On a horse.
He was never a simple guy.
<tall. laughs>
Yeah. But you know, like so, when he describes the battles. The movements in the battles are dispensed with in a couple of sentences. So he's not concentrating on that. But instead, he'll be talking about what Napoleon ate for breakfast on that day.
I was wondering about that, too.
Yeah, where he sat, what clothes he wore, what mood he was in, what letters had he just received that may have from his wife that may have made him think something different, being distracted while sending thousands of men to their deaths.
That's something that I would be into more than, you know, the technicalities of the fight.
And it's a single volume.
Yeah. I loved it. I've always been fascinated by Napoleon. I used to admire him enormously. And then as years went by, I thought, actually, hang on a second. The man was just a dictator. but really good book. So I'm glad I read that.
What's it called again?
Napoleon by Adam Zamoyski.
Where can we get this book?
From a bookshop.
Oh, what's that?
or Amazon, etc. It's out on paperback.
Cool.
So, Sim.
Yes, so I'm going to take off what Ali recommended and go back to Japan. So, recently I was in Bangkok for a music festival, Maho Rasop, and there was this band that I caught. They're called Chai, C-H-A-I, from Japan. It's fronted by these four girls. I was absolutely floored by them. I was listening to them before I went to the festival. A friend of mine told me to check them out because he was like, we should really catch them because it's going to be amazing. And I listened to them and they were great. They're kind of like these like punkish rock girls, and they kind of like added a tinge of cute to their musical style. So their performance was amazing. You take away that stereotype where you think about like female Japanese pop music performers, you know, that kawaii thing, and they kind of like made it their own. They still have that cutesy voice, you know, they're all dressed in pink, you know, but their music messaging is of body positivity, and it's just a great watch, you know, because it was a performance. They were jamming, they were singing, they were screaming, and suddenly they started dressing up, and four of them were like in the costume, and they started like doing synchronized dancing. So it was such a fun thing to watch.
Mind, I'm thinking Blondie, kind of like
a little bit. But Japan's always had this thing like cutesy and brutalism. I mean, they have a metal band called Baby Metal.
Yes,
again,
yes,
three
yeah.
girls fronting a metal band, like a really like brutal metal band. But Chai, I mean, I've never heard of the name before. I saw a screen cap of them on NPR's Tiny Desk concert.
Yeah, they had a Tiny Desk. Yeah, go check it out. So yeah, I mean, for me, they have a very inherently punk spirit to them. They don't make punk music in the traditional sense, but they rock out. They can be aggressive. They can be soft. They can be, you know, cool. It's a fun listen and a great watch.
You have to see them.
Watching them live is an experience.
So if you listen to it, would you be thinking, hey, this is fantastic?
If you listen to them and you watch their music videos, you will understand why they're quite
awesome. So you do have to see them.
Yeah, watching them live will really change what you think about them.
Let's play out with it.
Okay.
Yeah?
Did you catch the names of any other tracks?
They have a song called Neo, N-E-O. So I think that would be quite nice.
That.
Yeah, that's my favorite song from them, yeah.
Cool.
Let's play out with that, Cam.
So that's Chai.
Mm-hmm. Like the T.
And we're going to play out with the song Neo. All right, where's our next festival venue then, Sim? Tell us, where are we going?
Well, KL is having some performances this week. Urbanscapes is doing something, some bands are coming down. So I'll probably be checking them out.
Okay, and I'll go with you. Oh, no, actually, I'm going off to
Penang,
Georgetown Literary Festival. If you hear this on the Saturday, please drive up immediately, come see us. But if you listen to us next week...
You're moderating something, Sam?
I'm moderating two sessions, one with Uzbeki author.
Interesting.
Hamid Ismailov. And another one on history. So I'm looking forward to it. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. Only remains me to thank Sim Wee Boon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And a rare sighting of, or hearing rather, of Ali Johan.
Always here.
And myself, Cam Rastan. And we're going to play out with Neo by Chai.
Yes.
Here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.